welcome back. I'm Jacqueline.
And it's Alana. Welcome back to another episode of Black and Yellow.
Yay.
You're in for a good old chat today.
Yes, you are.
A little light chat about assimilation.
Yes, simple assimilation.
Yeah, easy, nice, breezy. So this is more of a, let's talk about it because I have a question and I feel like an ignorant American having to ask, but I feel like this is a question that I'm not the only one who has.
Okay.
So.
Go for it. Shoot.
When it comes to Asian Americans, I've often wondered, it seems like there's two philosophies on assimilation. You've got the total, totally assimilated, probably before they even get off the plane. They're like, I am American. I'm American values, American food. I'm going to try and understand American culture as best as possible. And then you've got the other group that's like, even though I'm in America, I'm going to hold true to my culture, my history, my belief, and not assimilate as much as one might think I should. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
And I just wonder, how does that happen? Like the total assimilators versus the non-assimilators. How is the decision made? What factors go into making that decision? Mm-hmm. Things like that.
All right. Well, I definitely think as an outsider, you can definitely see how black and white it can be.
Correct.
I definitely think there's a little bit more of a gray area.
Okay.
That maybe because you're not Asian, you don't see the nuances or the actual fully. Which I totally understand. I'm going to start off with a definition of assimilation.
Go for it.
Liked the best I found.
You know I love a definition.
I know you do.
Yes.
On dictionary.com, because I looked at a bunch, and as far as what we're talking about today, didn't really apply the best.
Oh, okay.
So this one was on dictionary.com and said, the process by which a person or persons acquire the social and psychological characteristics of a group.
All right. And that's dictionary.com's definition. Got
it. Which I thought was pretty on par of as far as complete assimilation, partially non-assimilation, if that's what you're talking about.
Okay.
I also want to say that it's very multidimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was doing research, when I was thinking about my own life as far as being in this country or being a daughter of an immigrant, knowing a lot of immigrants, it's very complex. Hmm. And some people, like you said, come off the plane and are like ready to go.
Right.
And some people don't even have that idea. They just know they want to come to America.
Ah.
They know they want to escape their land. They know they just want to be somewhere better, and that better is America, but they don't really know what comes with that until they're here.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I think I follow. Okay.
Yeah. So I think I've also know a lot of Asians that haven't, like, they've been in America for 30 to 40 years and don't speak a drop of English.
And that is amazing to me. Like, that blows my mind. And how does one person decide, no, I'm not going to learn this language. And then another is like, no, yeah, I'm going to learn this language because it's going to make my life easier here in America.
Right. I mean, there's this talk of like the old Asian and the new Asian of, you know, the boom of the Asians immigrating here right after the 1960s.
Right.
Versus in the past two decades. And the numbers have definitely gone up. I think we're the number one. Chinese people are the number one immigrants here in the United States, followed by Latinos or Mexicans.
Got it. And just to be clear, China, mainland China, East Asia.
Mm-hmm.
First world country.
Yes.
Developed.
Yes.
Okay.
Smart. Yes.
I just feel like I have to point that out.
You do have to point that out.
Okay.
What was I saying? Oh, and if let's say, I mean, especially here in California, I'm specifically speaking California because I don't know anywhere else. I do know there's large populations of Chinese in Texas, New York, and Canada. For sure, Canada doesn't have to do with the United States, but yeah.
It's good to mention.
Yeah.
I know that Texas also has a big Korean population. Mm. I know Louisiana, New Orleans specifically, has a very large Vietnamese population.
Yes, because of the French. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. If you live in California and you live in the San Gabriel Valley, Monterey Park, Rancho Cucamonga, Hacienda Heights, if you haven't been to those areas, you drive around those areas, even the store names are in Chinese or Korean.
Wow.
You don't even need to, you know exactly what it is because it's all written in Chinese already.
Interesting.
It's not even written in English.
Hacienda Heights was like very Latino, but maybe that's changed. Wow.
I think it has changed a little bit.
Okay.
Definitely. So I had a friend growing up where her mom was an immigrant, and she, well, I guess she was an immigrant because she's kind of like a fob. She came here when she was 12.
Got it.
But she's pretty Americanized now after living here for plus 20 years. And I remember being at her house when I was in high school. We're talking about boys and drugs and being like really, you know, explicit in front of her mom. And I think it was maybe my first time at her actual house. And I turned and I said, hey, your mom's right here. Isn't she going to hear all of this and know that we're doing bad stuff?
Right.
And she went, oh, yeah, no, my mom doesn't understand it or speak Chinese or speak English. And I went,
oh,
what? I was mind blown. And I went, okay, so your mom has been here for at least 20 years and she doesn't speak a drop of English.
Does your friend speak? Can your friend communicate with her mom?
Yes. Yes. In Mandarin.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it. So it's not like a total loss in translation.
Not at all.
Okay. That's what I'm thinking.
But I was blown away at the fact of her not even needing to speak. Because the reason why you end up learning to speak English is because you need it.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
You
totally
need to talk to the cable company.
Right.
You need to talk to the people at the market.
Somehow. Or the DMV.
Or the DMV.
I just had an experience like that. Totally. I was picking up my personalized license plate, and the two women ahead of me was an Asian woman. She didn't speak a lick of English, but she was applying for a driver's license.
Uh-huh.
And she came in with a piece of paper, and I don't know if she spoke Mandarin, Cantonese, Chinese, whatever dialogue she spoke, she had it written out on a piece of paper. And so when it was her turn, she handed it to the DMV employee, who took the paper and was like, white man. Okay. And the feeling was very much like, I don't speak your language, but like, here, this is the language that I speak. Figure out someone who can translate.
Yeah.
And he basically came back and was like, we don't have anyone here that can translate and understand. You're going to have to wait. So there was obviously like a bit of a scuffle, and she was screaming at him in her language, and he was very calmly talking to her in English, and it was very much lost in translation.
Oh, geez.
It was a very odd thing to witness, because it's like, well, I'm sure you both are making very great points.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, neither one of you knows what the other one is saying.
Right.
But anywho. But yes, all that said, yes, language
is key.
It's the thing that ties us together. It's a communicator.
Yes. And so I think it comes down to two simple things that can actually obviously be varied in form. I think it's how necessary it is for you to, how by survival, you assimilate because you need to survive.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And then it's the, let's say if you are like my mother, my friend's mom, where you don't need the language or the access to the culture to survive, because let's say you're already in a predominantly Asian community, which is where I grew up. Then if do you want to?
Got it. Okay, I understand. Right? Yeah.
Because this is what blows my mind the most of seeing a lot of foreigners, especially Chinese foreigners here in the United States, is that they don't seem like they want to assimilate.
And why would that be?
I don't know. They're ignorant. I don't know. But it's interesting because Asian countries, you talk about Japan, Korea, China, They have this fascination to the Western culture.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They have this fascination of the big eye, the blonde, the music, the pop, media culture, all this stuff. But somehow they don't want to be Americanized or act American.
Yeah, that's interesting because all of the countries that you just named, again, are East Asian countries. They're first world countries. They're developed. Mm-hmm. So they obviously have access to American culture. But that's the American culture that's exported out of America.
Yes.
That's different than the culture that we really have here in America.
Here.
I guess
exactly.
I'm citing like the 60s, like greaser culture that I feel like that's at this point is an exported sort of American style culture heritage that it doesn't really exist here in America
as
anymore.
Much. Yeah.
It's not as prevalent.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very fine line. It's subtle, but sometimes it's not so subtle because I've seen perfect examples of people that have been here for 30 to 40 years and are still very, very Chinese. And I think it's just they somehow just seem to be set in their ways and don't really think it's important to become Americanized unless they, you know, intermarriage.
Yeah.
Or they end up having kids, maybe like me, who become start to become very Americanized.
Got it.
I think the best way that, and I read this in a great article, that the best way to actually describe the best current style of assimilation is the Asian American experience. Where
your experience.
Exactly. So, which is my experience.
Right.
Which is, not only do I understand where my mother came from and how important holding on to or preserving the Chinese culture, the food, the language, the dialogue, the values, and pass them on, but also knowing what an opportunity and how amazing it is to be American.
Got it.
Right? And all the great things that come with that.
Definitely. Now, I guess my question is, how does citizenship play a role in this?
Perfect. Yeah. I was just going to say that too. I think a lot of times too, maybe they don't, like the whole thing about going back, about how they don't feel like they have to, they don't care that they have to.
Right.
Because if they don't have their green card and they're not permanent, then they have to, they know they're going to have to leave.
Right.
So why try?
That. Ah, I understand. Okay. I see the mentality there.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Versus the person who knows they're getting a green card, or who knows they're going to become a permanent resident, or who knows they're going to go through the citizenship process, there's more
solid foundation. There's more of like, all right, like this is my home now.
Well, there's also incentive to become Americanized.
Oh, yes, 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 definitely.
Because let's say that you go through the citizenship process, you actually then can participate in elections. You can actually have a say in your...
You can buy land.
Correct.
You can vote. You can make a business. You can do so much that you wouldn't be able to if you don't
Got
have
it. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's super interesting, because while I'm not an immigrant, my family is from here. I don't have an immigration story background. I liken the decision to assimilate versus not assimilate. I liken it to an African American's experience of how Black and how authentically Black we want to be or we choose to be. What I mean by that is this: as African Americans, we are Black. We have a strong history, culture, heritage. And some people wield that more than others, and some people wield it differently than others. For some Black people, let's take professional ball players, rappers, you see
the culture.
The culture, but you also see the narrative of fuck the white gays. I don't give a fuck what those white people think. I'm doing me. I'm wearing what I want to wear. I'm saying what I want to say. I'm making the music that I want to make, that my community will understand and relate to. Essentially, they are authentically Black and don't give a fuck what white people think.
Right.
And they're not only living like that for themselves, they're also living like that for the hundreds of thousands of other Black people out there that can't do that just cannot live in that super Black, pro-Black, Black and I'm proud sort of lifestyle. Because in African-American culture, we have been taught from an early age, look, if you want true success, true financial wealth, you got to learn how to work with white people.
Yes.
Not only do you have to learn how to work with white people, you have to make white people feel comfortable around you. If white people don't feel comfortable around you, they're not going to hire you. They're not going to promote you. They're not going to take your interview. So not only do you have to make white people feel comfortable, you have to be comfortable making white people feel comfortable around you.
Oh, I see.
So you've got like the rappers and ball players on one end that are like, my talent, my music, my whatever, my swag.
They got picked up when they were 18, didn't even have to really try, straight out of high school.
Right. But it's also why those types of Black people are super hypnotizing to like young white youth.
Yeah.
Because those guys are doing whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
And they're living their true, authentic Black self.
Right.
Which I think is something that A, white suburban America doesn't understand.
No.
B, doesn't really get a chance to do because they can't live an urban experience that they've never lived before.
Right.
And see, I think it is sort of going back to the dope by default episode where are Black people naturally cool?
Exactly.
Is it naturally our swag?
And where I was going to say too, that I do think A, B, and a little bit of C, which is somehow deep down inside, they wish they could be a little like that.
Right.
But they'll never be able to have that urban experience.
Exactly.
Because they're white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the close proximity, but you're never actually going to fully understand and live it.
No, no way.
But then you've got other Black people, I'm going to call myself out like me, that are like, look, I want to be successful. And I know being successful, I have to, I'm working in a predominantly white industry. I got to make white people comfortable around me. That's just the name of this game. And I think that I've done a very good job of doing that.
And how much of that is on your, how much of it is conscious and unconscious now that you've been alive for this many years on this planet?
Ooh, that's a good question.
How often do you go into a scenario where you're like, wow, everyone's white, let me be on my best white behavior? Or how, you know, I'm curious.
Code switching is what the African American community calls the way that we...
That's so interesting. I was getting coached for an audition, and someone just told me about that code switching thing.
Yeah.
And I went, Alana has never talked about it. And then one day later, here you are.
Here I am talking about it. I'm sure Asian Americans have their version of it too. But essentially, code switching is when I'm in an all black neighborhood, I'm being my authentic black self.
Yeah.
I'm speaking the way that I would speak to any family member. If I ever go to Leimert Park and just like want to have a black day, I will sit outside with my black book, my black history book, or my black feminism book. I will say, hey, what's up, my spiritual soul brother, to the men walking down the street. I will eat my soul food. I will talk black issues in a very unfiltered way around black people.
Yeah.
However, when I go to a white neighborhood, the language gets cleaned up.
That's
I'm
so
not talking about certain issues that I would talk about on this podcast with someone like you or in these predominantly African-American yeah. neighborhoods or around family
right.
with all these white people. Mm. Or if I do talk about these heavy topics, I speak of them very differently.
Mm.
I'm definitely not as blunt, not as curt, because I'm aware that I'm generally one of a few black people in this predominantly white area. I don't want to scare you. I don't want to alienate you. But I also want to keep it
right.
real.
So you're very good at it now. Like, I don't think you
yeah.
question it anymore.
No,
right?
And I think ask any black person, they'll probably tell you the same thing.
Mm.
That they've gotten really good at code switching. And for some black people, the code switching never stops. That's how you get the whitewash label. It's like, oh, that person's whitewashed. Well, it's because that person is code switched so much or has been around white people so much that eventually you just don't flip the code switch on and off. You're just on all
yeah,
the time,
ready
to seamlessly transition from predominantly white areas to maybe black areas.
Okay, yeah.
And those people also make a decision.
They make the decision of what's gonna get me to be the best,
yeah,
get the best out of whatever I have.
Definitely.
Yes.
For sure. Going back to my original point, you've got like the ball players that are like, I don't give a fuck about white people and what they think about
yeah.
me. You've got people like me that are like, I give a fuck what white people think about me because I want them to hire me for shit. So
yeah.
I have to give a fuck.
Yeah.
You've also got an older generation of black people that are like, you know, I don't dislike white people, but I also don't truly have any sort of intimate connection with white people.
Okay.
Like, I don't have white people as friends. I don't have white people as
bosses
or
yeah.
lovers, past, present, or future.
Sure.
Like, white people are truly an other to me,
yes.
especially when you're talking about maybe middle class or lower income black people
mm-hmm.
speaking to upper middle class or upper class white people.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly a sense of like an other. That's like the racial divide and racial difference playing out.
Okay.
Where you're just kind of indifferent. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's not like bad or good. It's just
exactly.
based on your circumstance.
For sure.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that black people in America today have to sort of figure out where they fit in that and what world they want to travel in. I certainly have African-American friends of mine who only shop at black-owned businesses. They work for black people at African-American companies. They don't necessarily hang out with white people. They don't keep them as personal
mm-hmm,
friends.
Mm-hmm.
But when they see them on the street or when they have to interact with them in public spaces, they're not like, oh, white people. They're
mm-hmm.
cordial. They're civil.
Right.
But the people that they choose to like hold closest to their heart are African Americans.
Mm.
So I liken, I know it's not the exact same thing because
mm-hmm.
I know it's not an immigration story. I know
sure.
it's not the choice to take on a new national heritage.
Yes.
It's the closest parallel I can draw is like how a black person wields their blackness and what that means to the black community and to white people.
Yeah.
Or I should just say other communities that
right.
aren't black.
That's fascinating for me too, to think about that aspect in your guys's community, because I as far as like code switching, I definitely felt that younger on of like growing up in a predominantly Asian community, I felt very Asian, very normal.
Okay.
Right? And
yeah.
then when I moved to Orange County,
Very not normal.
I never felt more Asian in my life.
Of course. Yeah.
And that was so bizarre, those two, because bizarre is in like, I had never really felt that my whole life growing up. And then all of a sudden I felt it at an exponentially intense
rate. Yeah.
And young on top of that. I was only 13. I was 14. So, you know, the sense of who am I? What am I?
Figuring out that minority identity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Was pretty, I don't want to say traumatizing because it wasn't, but that it almost felt a little like overwhelming. Like I didn't really know what to do or how to be.
Totally.
And so I can definitely relate on that aspect. But taking it back to assimilation, I think as far as the Asian American experience, which is something that is getting talked about more. I mean, Crazy Rich Asians is coming out. I'm so freaking excited. 25 years it took. Like, I'm so excited. But the thing of really growing up in America, mm-hmm. but still having close ties to the culture and how to find a balance of both of that,
right.
I think is pretty ideal.
I have a question. What happens internally to the immigrant that's coming over here and that decides to assimilate? Like, do they get heat from their close family unit? Basically being like,
no.
Oh, you're selling out?
No.
Sort of the way that black folks do?
Not at all.
Okay.
I think if anything, it's admired. I think if anything, like, I take my mom. Like, my mom knows five languages.
Wow.
My mom's been an immigrant twice. She immigrated to Brazil when she was young. From Taiwan, she immigrated to Brazil. And then from Brazil, she immigrated to the U.S. So she's been through a lot.
So she learned the language of the places that she lived because
yes.
she obviously had
she
to
learned
communicate.
The language, the behavior, the needs, the wants, the attitude. She learned everything a lot fast, like no choice. She had to survive with her family. And the thing with my mom is that she she was an immigrant to Brazil, but she moved to Brazil when she was so young that she learned better and faster Portuguese than her parents. So she sort of had to start to help out her parents
like
in the culture, translating, do the stuff that maybe the parents should have done that.
Got it.
And so there was sort of this sense of responsibility to take care of her parents
right.
when she was only 12, you know, in that sense of the language and the dialect and the ways they are and all this stuff.
Right.
Which is very different from you take from one like predominantly or like, excuse me, very Chinese culture to Taiwanese culture to a Latin culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like day and night, you know?
Yeah.
In the ways of the speak, the touch, the mm-hmm. rhythm, the groove, all of that stuff, the food. And then her coming here, I think, was another shock. Not so much of a shock, but just like she's always wanted to come to America. She
got
knew
it.
That America was her dream, was always like destined to be in America.
Got it. Okay.
And she got it. But I think now she has assimilated very well. Like even sometimes the stuff she speaks about in English or the words that come out of her mouth, I'm really surprised. She'll use really interesting terms and really high vocabulary words that I never taught her, and she didn't go to school.
Right.
She did go to English school for a couple years out here.
Okay.
But then a lot of our relatives that are still in Taiwan will come visit us or will come and talk to her. And they're just so amazed at how she's been able to completely grasp the culture and the language.
Well, I think if you could speak five different languages, I mean, I'm sure there are words and phrases in other languages that we don't necessarily have here in America.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they're still in her vernacular, in her brain.
Yes.
And they're good to use.
Definitely.
They're solid. So I wonder if having a handle on more than one language
helps, of course.
It, like, beefs up her vocabulary overall, regardless
Definitely.
Of what language
I think
speaking.
She got lucky, and because of all the languages or because of the because she's already immigrated before, her mm-hmm. ability to assimilate was somehow, that muscle had already been worked on when
got
she
it.
Was young.
Got it.
You know?
Interesting. Assimilation as a muscle.
Yeah.
It's a skill. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, it kind of is.
You kind of do have to flex it. And it is very much like code switching, where you have to get good at code switching to do it right, to do it believably,
right.
and to do it in a way that feels authentic.
To yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because it's like me. It's like if you take my Asian American experience, there's been times where I'm in a group of white people or I'm in somewhere where I'm like, I don't really feel like this is vibing.
Yeah.
I'm not really into this, but I'm going to play this. I'm going to do my best. And mm-hmm. I'd rather be with my people. I'd feel more comfortable. Or what? There's always been those little moments where I can see that it's not very authentic.
Got it.
And then it's like, do I want to recreate that experience? Probably not.
Right.
You know? So then it's just kind of figuring out, like, who's your tribe? What is it you want to do? And be true to yourself.
Got it.
But not that I'm shunning the, I mean, I'm so
of course
I'm grateful
not.
For this country.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm also very proud of my country.
For sure.
So, yeah, I think it's that balance, knowing, like, seeing it as a muscle and being able to use it to your best and mm-hmm. to shine the light on other people with that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Do you think that certain Asians immigrating to America to then become Asian Americans, do you think geographically where they left to come here plays a role in how easily or not so easily they assimilate?
Yes and no. I mean, I would think, like, as far as scholar-wise, like academic-wise, mm-hmm. like Koreans, Indians.
Got it. Okay.
And Japanese, like mm-hmm. they, and Chinese people, they definitely hold higher degrees and have completion of college education over Americans in the state. Like,
yeah.
That's a statistic for sure.
Well, but go ahead. Yeah.
Go back. What was your question again?
I was going to say, like, East Asia.
Uh-huh.
China, mainland Japan.
Right.
North Korea, South Korea. First world countries, very developed. They have big cities. So one could argue it's like going from one big city
to another.
In one country to another.
Yes.
Versus maybe Southern Asians.
Yes.
Filipinos, Vietnamese, mm-hmm. Macau, Singapore.
Right.
It's a developed country, but it's not necessarily like first world.
No, definitely. Well, I could say, I mean, definitely the Filipinos with their after Filipinos came under American land.
Yes.
The Filipino nursing
programs
are huge here, which is great for them, I think.
Yeah.
But I do understand that as far as going from one not so developed country into another, it can only be an upgrade for them.
Okay, I think that's my question.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I think if anything, it's an upgrade for them to be like, holy shit, where I came from, if I wanted to and try as hard as I could, I would have only been able to make $200 a month.
Hmm.
Here in America, on minimum wage, I can make $200 a week.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's why there is such an influx, I think, of people wanting to come here. Because even with nothing, even out of nothing,
mm-hmm.
you can have a little something, which is nothing compared to your little something in your country.
Which
blows
Got
my
it.
Mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's why everyone wants to be here. Everyone has this thing of, like, America is the best.
Yeah. Land of the free, you know.
All that jazz.
You're allowed to think bigger and maybe your craziest dreams stand a chance of becoming real here in America.
Yes, whereas where you're from, it would never be possible. Simply because of the state of the country, the government, their position, all this stuff.
Got it.
Yeah. We could propose the questions of how important is it to assimilate? Because
mm-hmm.
I've obviously assimilated enough, so
correct.
I know it's important. It's benefited me. I know people who haven't assimilated and are doing fine.
Right.
I know people that don't want to assimilate
at all,
mm-hmm. and hopefully they will be fine. What are your thoughts on that?
So, as an outsider looking in, my first thought if I'm putting myself in the shoes of someone who is faced with a decision to assimilate or not. I worry about if you fully Americanize and assimilate, are you losing a bit of your culture?
Mm-hmm.
Are you forgetting?
Which I've seen.
Yes.
I've seen
definitely.
Happen, for sure.
And
it breaks my heart.
Right. And I was going to say the exact same thing. That makes me really sad.
It does.
If that's the trade-off, if you fully assimilate and then lose all your history because of this new national identity.
Right. Then maybe don't.
Well, I feel like that's a bit of a death.
It is.
And I don't think it's fair to put that on immigrants coming into this country.
No.
I guess my thing, again, as an outsider looking in, is I've always thought of assimilation as a very confusing thing for someone immigrating here. It seems like everyone has a different idea of what assimilation is
mm-hmm.
in terms of learning the language, taking on our American ideals, liking what we like, watching sports that we like, eating the food that we eat, going to the places that we travel.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling as though, how long does one have to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of an indeterminate timeline
yes,
as
definitely.
To how someone should be
yes.
properly assimilated, quote unquote. I also think that what it means to be American means different things to different people.
Yes.
If you ask an African American what it means to be American, I'm going to have a very different idea versus middle bread. White America, middle America. Oh my God, why did it take so long for me to say
okay.
that? Versus white bread, middle America. We're going to have two different ideas of what it means to be American.
Completely.
So then what does that then mean to the immigrant that's coming here that's like, I know I have to assimilate kind of, but what does that mean? Whose version of America do I take on as the version of America that I want to uphold the ideals of?
Sure.
And then how long does this person have to do it?
Yeah, well, I think you have your whole life to do it. I don't think there is a necessarily you have to be this by this age or you have to have learned this. I think assimilation is multidimensional, mm-hmm. like I said before. And I think it takes phases and years and it ripens and develops on its own. It's like a fine wine.
Okay.
I think it's like... If someone or if an immigrant has decided to assimilate or has begun the process of moving to America, getting their green card, however they get it, if they marry in, if they are sponsored, if they are moved here by the company, so on and so forth. I think the minute they choose to really make this their home or decide that obviously they've always wanted to be here and they're excited mm-hmm. to have finally arrived at their dream country, then just start to really learn the ways of the people and the language. And I think with that, they'll find their own way eventually.
They'll
find their own version of how to assimilate and why to assimilate.
I hear that.
I can see how in the beginning, though, what you're talking about can be a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like, well, there's this way and that way, and they're like this. And then you have the Southern people, and then you have the East Coast and the West Coast.
Right,
and you're just
exactly.
Like, and then Middle America, and you're
that's
like...
That's right. Middle bread.
It can be middle bread. There you go. Let's call them that. It can be a little overwhelming, but I think a community helps. Like having a strong community of whether it's like-minded people mm-hmm. or similar races. If you are a Filipino, and you see that, right?
Definitely.
You see little, I mean, especially here in Los Angeles, you have like
pockets
of Koreatown.
For sure. You know, Thai town.
Yeah.
All
that stuff, which then it makes perfect sense why you would naturally be gravitated towards there.
Absolutely. I guess so. I think that's totally true. It's a very romantic way of thinking about assimilation.
Yeah.
My heart then goes out to the immigrant, the Chinese American that's really trying to assimilate to American culture, and you've got some jackass American that for some reason is having a bad fucking day, sees an Asian person and is like, "Go back to China."
Mm-hmm.
While this person's like, no, actually, like, I've been here for 2 years. I'm really trying to learn your language.
Right, I'm really trying
to, like, uphold your ideals. Like, please don't discriminate against me.
Well, I've been told that. People have told me to go back to China. And I'm like, I was born here. So if you want me to go back to my home, I'm going to be right here. Like, I'm going to go back to right here.
Yeah, it's the trope of the constant foreigner at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I...
Yeah, you got it, girl.
Yeah, and that makes me so sad.
Yeah.
And then I would just think, oh my God, if I were that immigrant that's just trying to assimilate and I hear some jackass or some schmuck or some whatever tell me that, I would just feel so defeated. But I guess that's the minority experience no matter where you
it's
are.
Okay, based on the model minority, I'm sure that Asian guy will end up getting a PhD and making triple what the white guy made in a couple of years.
Jackie, you're speaking truth. Jackie, like...
That's it.
Yes.
Case and done.
Crazy Ranch Asians. No, but I hear what you're saying.
No.
And I guess I would... I'm trying to run it parallel to the African-American community.
Yeah.
But when it comes to assimilating, I think language is a really big part of it.
If that's the one thing I could... if I could pass it on and plant a little seed to all my little fellow Asian Americans or Asian immigrants that are landing here for the first time, is start with the language. Not only will it help you vastly mm-hmm. in communication, in making your life easier, in dealing with taxes, DMV, cable people, utility stuff, just the confidence it gives you as a person, mm-hmm. the self-esteem, the not having Alzheimer's when you're younger, the challenging the brain. You know, there's just so much benefits to learning a new language, period.
Yeah.
And then not only learning it in the country that you have decided to make your home.
Right.
If that's the one thing I could say that is the most important and the one thing they should focus on the most, is just learn the language. And by learning the language, you already are maybe halfway in.
I completely understand what you're saying. Because I have this thing about sounding like an asshole American, I'm not going to say, yes, Asian people learn the language. I'm not going to co-sign on that. I think it's helpful, but I'm not going to. I feel weird saying, like, yeah, y'all need to learn the language. Yeah. I just feel like an asshole.
Right. I'll say it. I'll tell them.
But I do think that language is a big connector. Because huge. Because, I mean, when it comes to Black people in this country, we speak English. We all speak the same
dialogue
as white people. Yeah. The same dialogue and the same slang as white folks do. And I think the minute that you show your hand and show that you cannot speak the language, you are automatically an other.
You are. You're put into this place of, like, oh, instantly.
And I think that for some Americans, read white Americans, that's really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I like to know what is being said, whether it's about me or whether it's not. I want to know what's being said.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the white women that I know that do not go to Vietnamese nail salons because they are convinced the minute that they come in and say manicure and pedicure, the manicurist is going to look at their feet and hands and say something in a different language to their coworkers. Mm. And these women swear that they are just, like, ragging on their feet.
Wow.
Like, look at these raggedy fucking cuticles. This bitch. And where to me, I'm like, honestly, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, if I need a mani and pedi, it's because my fucking feet look like I've been picking up rocks with them and my nails are bitten off and my cuticles are raggedy AF. Like, yeah, you have every right to talk about me and my raggedy hands and feet. Like, I'm not going to get angry about it. That's but I also am not going to feel, like, personally offended or like I'm in an intense cultural situation that I can't break out of because someone is speaking a language that is different than me.
That is such an important point. That is such an important thing that you point out, because I think there is the sense of they aren't as, the American as a whole aren't as cultured, you know? So
yeah, we're not as well traveled as a country as a whole as other countries. And that's not just Asian countries.
Yeah.
That's European countries as well. Yeah. Travel is much more affordable, so you're able to experience different cultures.
Right. And also a lot of countries, they start learning different languages really young already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's somewhat you start in grade school. And here you only start learning a different culture.
High school.
In high school.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what, at least 5 years difference, which then makes a difference
totally.
in your perception of the outside world and other countries.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, there's this thing, you know, I've heard a lot of other countries, you know, what's the number one kind of tourist they hate, and a lot of them is American tourists.
Yeah, totally.
And it makes sense. It gives them a really bad rep, you know?
Yeah.
But
we take our culture with us wherever we go.
Yes.
I mean, I think that Americans and British people are very similar in that, like, wherever we go, we are American. Wherever mm-hmm. Brits go, they are going to let you know, I am from the UK.
Yep.
You need to go. It is the best place on earth.
Uh-huh.
We have the best food. Our architecture is really cute. Yep. People are sick. I can definitely see the parallel drawn there. It's also why I think perhaps Hispanic Americans, when we're talking about assimilation, while they get some grief, I think because Spanish is such a spoken language, not mm-hmm. just here in the U.S., but around the world, I think the language barrier there is a little bit, the language excuse, we'll call it, is a little bit lessened. Because a lot of people, even if they can't speak Spanish, a lot of people, at least in Los Angeles, can understand Spanish.
Yes, they can.
I'm not fluent in Spanish by any means.
Right.
I live in a predominantly Hispanic area.
Yeah.
I can at least hear the conversations around me and go, oh, okay, they're talking about this.
Yeah.
Oh, or her mother did something dirty.
Yeah.
Oh, her baby daddy is messed up. Oh, she got stood up. Or whatever. Like, I can understand that, whereas I think when you don't have any sort of words to link you into
the culture
you, there's a sense of I feel unsafe.
Yeah, you feel a little alienated and you can't help but, like, not want to be there.
Right, exactly. Our brain likes to know what's going on.
Yeah, mayday,
we don't know
mayday.
What's... Exactly, for
Get
sure.
Get the fuck out of here.
Totally.
Survival, you know, everything else kicks in for you to make sure to feel that you're safe.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
Bet you could have said it in a different language and other people would have understood you, but Lord knows I couldn't say it in Spanish. Okay, guys, that's our show for today. The show was produced by Christian Humes over at Zeitgeist. Please find us on the IG if you want to reach out and give us some show ideas or tell us how we're doing. You can find us at Black and Yellow Podcast on Instagram. Don't forget to hop on over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to Black and Yellow, and leave us a rate and review so we know how we're doing.
Yes.
Or if you want to find us individually, I'm Alana Webster at Renegade of Fun on Instagram.
I'm Jacqueline Chung Young on the gram. We hope to hear from you guys and stay tuned for the next episode.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.